Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast. My name is Taylor, and today we talked to a runner who had the typical COVID running experience, was looking for goals, and found them through running in 2020. These goals led him all the way to the 2022 New York City Marathon, which we actually get into a lot of detail on, so I'm going to go ahead and let him speak for himself. Please welcome Pete. Pete, thank you so much for coming on the podcast this weekend. It's great to meet you. Hope you're having a great weekend.
Yeah, great to meet you too. It's been quite a weekend. A lot of interesting things going on, but it's been good.
Well, cool. Excited to hear about your story here. I want to kind of just start from the beginning, if that works for you. How did you get involved in the running world in the first place?
Well, I was one of the classic people who discovered it through COVID. So basically, I came from an environment that was like part the one person that was 150 pounds in high school that could like fill in for a role because there weren't enough big guys in the football team at my high school. Like that's the kind of environment fitness wise that I've been used to. Mm. So I never really pictured running as a thing that I would get into ever. So what ended up happening was because of lockdown, I was in the middle of a position where I was living at home still. My sister was also living at home, but she had an out because she had kind of a shotgun wedding of sorts right when the peak of lockdowns were happening and she was off. So I was living at home and needed some sort of outlet just to get some kind of fresh air and, you know, life outside of the family kind of atmosphere, which, you know, it's great, but it has its... You know how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all that. So, and running became that thing. I could go outside, touch some grass, and just enjoy the environment a bit and zone out for a while, which, you know, it started off as just a thing where I could run a couple of miles, which ended up really being like run at an 8-minute pace for like half a mile and just sort of walk and run after that, however long I wanted to. But that spurred everything, all the kinds of things that got me inspired, really. It turned into a very exponential growth from just a few miles a week to building up to the big marathon distance. But it ended up being this incredible experience through the five boroughs in New York City in 2022. One of, if not the hottest, I think, on record, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, it's something that I'll never forget, and it hooked me. It really did.
Yeah, for sure. So you kind of got into it pretty organically, I guess you would say. So you just like were searching for some goals in 2020, started to just kind of put one foot in front of the other. It sounds like, did you have anything that you were kind of following at the time, or just were like, I'm going to go put some shoes on, go out and run, and whatever I run is what I run for today.
Pretty much that. I mean, eventually I got to the point where I had the Nike app, which I know gets a lot of flack, but I love Coach Bennett's like trains things that he does. So, you know, I'm a bit of an apologist there. I didn't really have any sort of goals outside of trying to do something a little bit better than I did the last time I was out there. So, you know, there are different courses within the neighborhood that I built up over time. You know, you naturally have the routines that get created, and depending on what you want to run that day, you pick what distance, not really knowing what rest days were and all kinds of other stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you know, you just you give it a shot and see what happens, and eventually it built up to, I think I was doing like 38 minute 5Ks or something like that. Like I had gotten a 5K course down and was building up as best I can with that, but still not really knowing what pacing was or any sort of actual structure to it. So I was just running.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, it has to start somewhere, right? So you have to start just putting one foot in front of the other, and then it can kind of spiral from there. And you mentioned a race organization that you got involved with, I'm assuming like a sponsor or a charity, I mean, of some sort. Was that the motivation? Like, did you find the charity before you knew about the New York Marathon or running a marathon, or how did that all kind of unfold?
Yeah, so I knew about Charity Bibs first and foremost. I was looking for different ways in order to try and get into the race in some sort of way, because I saw all the time cutoffs and I'm like, that's cute. 250 marathon scratch? Maybe not.
Yeah.
So, you know, naturally you find other ways to get in. And I think it was New York Roadrunners website that I had seen that this was a thing that had gone on. So I remember finding myself on a Facebook group, and I don't use Facebook that much anymore, but it seemed like the best thing to do to find, you know, runners out there that knew how to get in. There's this guy from Norway that's done the New York City Marathon, I think like 45 years in a row or some crazy thing like that. But he had a group on Facebook with like a couple thousand people that I just one day was like, hey, you know, I'm looking for a charity to possibly run the marathon for. I don't really know how this all works. And I knew I wanted to do something veterans related. I just sort of asked, you know, what kind of suggestions there were for folks that had Charity Bibs. And I found Homes for Our Troops through that, which is, you know, the best that I could find in terms of actually putting the money down to the actual cause itself. They build specially adaptive homes for folks that were wounded in action in Iraq and Afghanistan, which, you know, it fit the moment, I think, for what I was looking for and the type of fundraising that I was doing. And it was perfect because they were building a house in Cheshire, which was within an hour's drive from me. So I was able to see it firsthand throughout the whole process what it was like. So I ended up finding that worked out well. The limit was technically 3,000. I think it's gone up since then. If anybody's interested for it, I think it's now up to like 3,200. But you know, the demand for everything major marathon related is higher. So you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, they were an inspiring organization. The people that I was sort of, I was doing a lot of lurking and not a lot of like putting myself out there, but the people that I was seeing, you know, put the work in for the marathons were just incredible to see. So it was kind of a combination of rising tides taking up everything. And I was just floating along, you know?
Yeah, no, that's great. I've heard really great things about a lot of those charity organizations and just like feeling like you're a part of a team too, which is pretty cool. That's great.
Absolutely.
And then from there, so I guess this is kind of a step back before the charity, but what made you want to sign up for a marathon in the first place? Was it just like that, still that place of I'm searching for a goal and I want to just find like this big, the biggest goal that I can go for? Or how did you kind of land on that?
I guess so. It's when it comes to fitness, I am somebody that definitely needs a goal to like push me through. Very much somebody that has tried to work out for the sake of working out and get sucked into, you know, other things that are going on. You know, if I'm busy with certain things or if my focus is elsewhere, like I don't allot myself the time as good as the average person on social media sort of suggests it's easy to do. So, you know, for me, I had to set some kind of a goal in order to get that done. Naturally, when you're in the middle of one of the biggest lockdowns, I think, in history, and your sort of window into the world is everything you find on social media, which has its positives and negatives. We won't get into that. So, you know, you sort of see this, you see a big marathon through rose-colored glasses and you think, why not me? And I think that's a lot of people I've met sort of have that same mentality whenever they get into this, is like, you know, you see all this stuff happen. You see all this stuff that people are capable of doing. And one day you just decide to flick that switch from it can never be me to why not, you know, life is short. So you gotta go for it.
No, I love that. Yeah, just like putting it out there and hoping for the best. It's like you're going to figure it out along the way. And as long as you kind of have faith in yourself that you are going to do that, then why not? Yeah, why not shoot for big goals? No, I think that's great. So what sort of, you said you were doing some research and kind of going down wormholes at the time, things like that. So what sort of like training plans were you looking into? Was it the Nike Run Club app, like you were saying, or something different?
It was kind of a mix of things. So I knew I needed to set something up that embedded in my schedule well. I am not a morning runner in the slightest. I am very okay. much a night owl. I blame my history of being in engineering school as the blame for that. So I wanted something that I could put together really well after work, after, you know, anything that I would need to take care of at home, in the afternoons. So I found like a good mix of various ideas for building up the mileage and putting things together in a way that was really well. I didn't necessarily focus too much on the speed work side of things in mm-hmm. planning out my training. My whole goal was to have 3 days a week where I could sit down, see the mileage that I needed to do, and just take care of it. That was the main thing that I was looking for. So I looked at a mix of things off of, you know, of Pinterest, of different running vloggers and things that I had run into, and kind of built something off of Excel that I knew I could commit to really well, and just based it off of that. And one of the other things that I did, because everything was getting back to normal in 2022, or a certain sense of normalcy. One of the things that I did was take advantage of the fact that there were a lot of races that were happening around me in some sort of capacity. So typically the Hartford Marathon is the big kind of big city marathon, quote unquote, when it comes to here in Connecticut. They have a program kind of similar to New York Road Runners or the BAA or anything like that, called HMF, Hartford Marathon Foundation. And they have races all over. But it's perfect because there's a natural progression from sort of the end of winter when everything's back to being in a normal temperature again, all the way to when the Hartford Marathon is typically on like mid-October. So I was able to set up my races so that I could do a whole bunch of 5Ks in the springtime. They have like a set of four that you can do amongst two weekends, in like the sort of St. Patrick's Day timeframe.
Sure.
So I could do that late spring, early summer. I could do a bunch of 10Ks that were going on, and then half marathons throughout the sort of lead up to the New York City Marathon in early November, where I think there were three that I did throughout that time. All with varying degrees of difficulty because, you know, the heat is something. It's definitely a factor whenever planning races and stuff. So it worked out well. I had not just the long-term goal, but the short-term goals of like, you know, getting the 5Ks done, getting to the 10Ks, finishing up the half marathons and doing it in a way that would be good training for when the time came to build things up to the marathon, and it all worked out really well.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I kind of did something similar for my first one, like sporadic races. I think it helps like to have something like that on the calendar so that the training doesn't get so monotonous.
Absolutely.
That's a great way to go about it. Yeah. And how much time, I should have asked this a little bit sooner, but how long was your training plan from like day you signed up to when the actual marathon date was?
So I think the first week of the year in 2022, I had a couple of my wisdom teeth out and was incapacitated for like a week. After that point, it was game on. So I started with like the sort of timed run walk kind of paces for the months of January and February, where it was starting out as, okay, you're going to do like 1 minute walk, 1 minute run, you're going to do that for 18 minutes. Or, you know, you eventually build up to the fact where you're doing like 2 and 2, 4 and 4 until you're eventually at a point where just for 30 minutes in succession, you're just running consistently with no walk breaks kind of thing. That's kind of where I started, which that felt like a way to build me into the distance requirements of the 5Ks. And then from there, you know, set up for the 5Ks, did it right in those four. I think there was an extra one like embedded within the 10K as well. But in planning for the 10K, that's when it just went from kind of speed work kind of things and focusing on, you know, going from run, walk to run to just getting distance done. So
yeah,
I think throughout the entire training process, I did not do a run without like consistent walk breaks. Like, I think everything over 4 miles was all run walks. Like,
yeah,
the type of 0.2 mile walk, 0.3 mile run, or doing a time base. So it's like 1 minute v 4 minutes, like that kind of thing. I was just focused on, you know, we just have a year to go from the couch to the marathon. Let's just focus on the distance. However much you walk, it doesn't matter, and just go for it.
Yeah.
So that ended up being the case. All of my sort of training runs were focused with that, just that pattern of getting used to the run walk paces, not, you know, sprinting when it was time to run. And that really worked out for me. That kind of built me into and got used to kind of zoning out in the middle of those runs that are particularly long. And I was able to really benefit from that, I think. And it ended up getting to a point when, you know, I would do the 10Ks and I would do the halves. And if I felt comfortable enough at the pace I was doing, just kind of going, you know, we can keep going, you know, see
yeah.
how this works out. And, you know, if I crash out, I crash out, and that's okay. And if not, then cool. You know, we've
yeah.
got a time in the books, you know? So it allowed me to kind of build that confidence and be okay with the long distances that I was not used to in the slightest. My legs weren't used to in the slightest, and just everything in between.
For sure. Yeah. In the beginning, it's just time on your feet is what you need. So walk when you need to walk, mm-hmm. run when you can run. That's a fantastic way to sort of build a base going into it. And I like that you also gave yourself pretty like almost a full year really to go from couch to marathon. So you weren't really pushing yourself. You gave yourself plenty of time. All of that sounds great. When you hit the, let's say, half marathon point, was the first time you ran a half marathon a race, or were you able to do that distance on a training run first?
So the first time I did the half marathon distance, it was in the middle of August. I think the forecast was 90 degrees, 90% humidity and sunny.
Yikes.
On a beach, Ocean Beach in New London, Connecticut, if anybody's familiar with it, John and Jesse Kelly half. And I knew because of the projected conditions, which ended up being those conditions, I treated it like a long run. I knew from the get-go, it's like, okay, this is going to be hard. It's going to get easier for the other two that you do later on. Let's just get the body used to that distance. See what happens. If you have to walk for like 5 miles in succession, so be it. And I think it ended up being that way, which, you know, it's, let's just say if you sign up for that race, pack your own water, because the water stations are kind of few and far between just because of how the course is drawn out.
Gotcha.
It's not a read on the race organizers by any means, because, you know, they have certain rules they have to follow municipally, but like, pack your own water, whatever you do. I really wanted to build the confidence first. And then, you know, I had a 2 month span in between the three halves that I did. It was really all about just getting comfortable with the distance, getting comfortable with the training runs being of that distance. And then by the last one, just making it feel more of a race pace, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. And then did you feel like your confidence was building every single half because you structured them a couple months apart? Like every single one felt a little bit better, or how did that look?
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
The weather 100% helped. The last one I did was the half marathon that went in parallel with the Hartford Marathon in mid-October. So naturally, when you're entering a race that's 90 degrees and 90 humidity versus one where it's like 40 degrees at start time, the confidence and the sentiment feels a little different.
Sure.
So I think that sort of natural progression definitely helped. But at the same time, you know, that one also has a lot of really good pace setters that help you along the race and kind of help build up the confidence as well. So that, I think, was a good confidence boost as well to kind of try and keep up with them and see how good I can do there. Once you really get used to those kinds of things and you're able to recognize how you work best, I think it really helps out in your confidence no matter what happens. So, you know, the natural weather-wise shifts between the 2 months of the half marathons that I did, it helped a lot, but I think it just really amplified what was already happening in my head, where you sort of identify those things and work with them, not against
them. Yeah, for sure. It makes you more adaptable, I think, the more race experiences you're in, because every training run, a lot of us, I think, fall victim to running the same routes over and over again when we're in training, because that's what we're comfortable with. And I think, honestly, that's a great way to train just for like safety reasons and being able to zone out a little bit and things like that. But no, you're 100% right. Like, every race is going to teach you something a little bit different, and being able to practice being adaptable before your big marathon day is just going to make it that much smoother. So no, that's great. Yeah.
It gets mundane too when you start doing those same routes again and you're like, oh, absolutely. This house says this gnome again. Hello, you know.
For that.
Anything changes?
Yeah.
No? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, this it whole does. Thing.
Gets a little monotonous for sure. Cool. And then, you know, I feel like for your first marathon, the most exciting part about it through training is hitting those 14-mile runs for the first time, 15, 16. You just constantly are building up. So what was it like for you hitting those different milestones, you know, week over week?
I'll be honest with you. I think having the first 13-miler as a long run being 2 months away from the actual marathon itself, I think that's the number one thing that I saw as I was planning the training was going to be the big knock, and it most certainly was. So I think if I was to do it again, and if I was to give any advice to people, give yourself plenty of lag time between that first half and that marathon, because it hits you like a brick once you have that burnout. But eventually you get used to it. Once you have that consistent training in, you get used to it. And thankfully it was to the point with the marathon itself that eventually I was able to, you know, build up a couple extra miles before things were starting to hit, once the wall was starting to really come at you. But we'll get into the marathon itself, I'm sure, shortly.
Sure. So getting a little closer to race day, obviously you're not local to New York City. So were you planning on going in a few days earlier, the day before? What did the logistics kind of look like?
So thankfully I was able to stay over at a friend's place, which made things logistically a heck of a lot easier. And I got in there early Friday. Saturday was spent kind of taking care of all of the, you know, the expo and all the logistics of getting the bib and
sure.
getting anything last minute and just walking around and taking it all in at the Javits Center, which even when you go into an expo of a major marathon like that, it's like you're walking into Diagon Alley for the first time. You look and see all the different, you know, not just walking up and getting your bib, but just the environment of all these different brands that are all selling stuff. The official merch that, you know, is X amount of times more expensive, but, you know, just having that, it's like getting the Letterman jacket as like an 80s movie high school footballer, you know, it just feels like you're part of a team or something. And I mean, even just walking around and taking in meeting different people, and you know, there's always that one booth that sells gutters at every...
I know, the random ones, well. Yeah.
It's like, it's a bold strategy, but listen, Lee Filter, I know you from NASCAR, and I know you from running stuff. So if it's right. brand awareness you're looking for, good on you. You
got
know?
It.
So, you know, it's just those little things and taking it all in. And I remember walking around Just walking around that area of, I think it's like 70th Street roughly, where all of the stuff that happens at Central Park, you know, after the fact and before, where everybody's, you know, the finish line is being built up, and you see all this fanfare and signage and everything, and you just think to yourself, wow, this city is really, when they talk about the New York City Marathon being like the world's biggest block party or the city's biggest block party, like you feel it. You really feel it in every way.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. And you even feel it the day before, it sounds like, which is even cooler. It speaks to the energy of the whole thing.
I tried to not take it too seriously because of the nerves that come with it, but I mean, you can't help it. So eventually I get to the New York Public Library, which is where they take all the buses in from there to Staten Island. Got to the starting village. I think I'd signed up for the 6 a.m. buses because I knew there was going to be a certain lag time that I needed to prepare and just sort of take it all in, let the anxiety kind of cast off to the side and just be comfortable about being in the environment. I was in the fifth wave, which starts at 11:15, so it was a good 4-hour block where I could just, you know, hang out in the starting village, geek out as all the pros were running, and take a look and see, oh, Don Nacimiento is leading. That's a weird person to be leading. Oh, so that's why he's overexerting himself. You know, once you get comfortable and you kind of see everybody else going and starting, and it worked out really well. By the time everything came to pass and it was my time to start taking the walk over to the Verrazano, you know, I was a lot more settled. I wasn't kind of racing all over the place. And, you know, made things a lot more calm, comfortable, collected, and it was ready to go.
Ready to go. Very exciting. Yeah, the whole build up to the whole thing, like, it sounds like it adds to the experience, whether in a positive way or a negative way, but either way, it adds to the overall energy of the whole thing, which is fun. So let's walk through the race. I want to hear, like, about maybe the first 10 miles or 10 to 13 miles of the race, if you want to kind of break down the first half for us.
For sure. So it was the hottest on record, but it was kind of in a weird way. Really, when I had started, things were starting to cloud up a bit. So there was a bit of a break from the heat that you could definitely feel in the starting village. I think it got up to about 75 degrees, which when you're in the city and it's the hot sun and you're running a very long race, that feels like 110. But thankfully, starting off, things had started to cloud up. I think there were some sprinkles that I got entering into Brooklyn, you know, miles 3, 4, 5. So really, it was all about getting that rhythm together and just sticking to the plan that was at play. What I wanted to do was having a time to run for 0.4 miles and then walking 0.1 miles. That way it was just, you know, ideally 52 rounds of running and walking. Had it all mapped out. Each half mile was just this methodical pattern that no matter what was going on, I knew that was the plan to stick to, and that was the overall goal. So that ended up working out well. I learned enough about kind of running past the water stations that, you know, I felt like I was confident that I could keep that going. The first couple water stations in Brooklyn, mile 3 and mile 4, was kind of the wake up point where, okay, the strategy needs to change a little bit. Let's try and keep going at a certain similar pattern. But when you see a water station, that's your walk break, just for safety reasons and, you know, making sure you don't slip and fall and, you know, your race is over before it really gets going.
Right.
So there was a bit of a shift there, but it ended up working out well because, you know, most of those water stations are usually about a mile apart. So it really just meant an adjustment for that. I also had a GoPro with me, recording the race itself, which is still on my YouTube channel, you can see the whole 6 hours in succession, which, you know, nice little background noise if anybody needs it. You get to miles 8 and 9, and then 12 and 13, you hit certain parts of Brooklyn where you get, like, you get the block party atmosphere a lot more.
Cool.
You hit those, like, you know, the 20-somethings that live in the city as their goal. All of those people culminate in, like, Williamsburg and all those different places. So you just have people that are on top of you almost, where it's like the best thing that I can describe is when you see, like, a big mountain stage in the Tour de France, and really the actual people competing have one lane where they can go up, and just everybody's hounding you, just cheering you on and going nuts. Especially at that point late in the day when, like, everybody's, you know, had their fill for the day, and you can tell from the look in their eyes that, you know, they've had a day. So it was so exhilarating just being in those type of environments and just seeing everybody kind of cheer you on and
show up for you.
And, you know, I saw ahead of time that was the big thing that you, one of the suggestions that you get is, like, have your name taped on your singlet and things like that. So naturally you do that, and, you know, you hear everybody cheering your name on. It's like, oh, this feels weird, but this kind of sounds awesome. So, really, I think the best thing that I could say is those first 15 miles or so were, they were methodical, you know, it was little ebbs and flows and things. Really the only big hill was the Verrazano at the very beginning. So it was just all about getting a rhythm, really.
Yeah. So it sounds pretty smooth so far. So first half, even a little bit more than half, things were going great. Strategy was working, all that good stuff. And then what happened from there? What did 15 to 26 look like?
You know what happened, Taylor? The Queensboro Bridge happened.
I was going to say, I know happened. The bridges are coming up.
Oh, yeah. So it's very interesting because that, so technically the first bridge after the Verrazano is the halfway point that takes you in from Brooklyn to Queens, which it is a hill. It's a 15-foot hill, roughly, I think. Or 50 to 100, I forget the exact number, which, you know, it's an uphill. You expect things to happen and those ebbs and flows to happen, which, you know, was able to get through it fine without too much issue. Queensboro is very interesting because, number one, the crowds are gone. I don't think anybody's allowed to, like, be a pedestrian on the bridge, even though it's still, you know, closed off for the marathon. So you don't hear anything outside of just footsteps all over the place. And it's just this consistent, almost like, it feels like a good mile and a half uphill, even though I think technically it isn't. But you're just in this sort of industrialized zone with yourself. So there was a little bit of help. I think people were starting to, you know, as they were running, just cheering, being like, yeah, we got this, you know, little things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just, when you're with yourself for that amount of time, like, you start getting a little, cranky. I think your body starts getting cranky, and you really, you recognize what exactly you're doing and how crazy it is. So I think there were a few more walk breaks that happened within the bridge itself. Just because I figured, you know, this is kind of a lull in the action and fanfare and everything. We'll just take a little break here. We're on good pace. Let's just kind of save the energy for the rest of the race. Cause I knew the sun was starting to come out. It was a hot day. You know, this was the opportunity to kind of take a breather. So get off the bridge, hop onto First Ave in Manhattan, and, you know, you see everything that is set up. Everybody who's a lot more on the touristy side is there, so the crowds are way bigger. And you take that turn, that kind of like a hairpin turn that takes you off one street that kind of goes in parallel with the bridge itself, and hop on First Avenue. You see a Trader Joe's sitting right there because you know, of course you have to get tempted with good food.
Of course.
So, you know, you completely underestimate just how hilly Manhattan as an island really is.
Yeah.
Because you start going up that hill and it feels a lot more difficult than you anticipate it. And it just, it's so strange because you never actually understand that before. Like, I've been to New York a bunch of times, like, to a level where, you know, when I go, I'm no longer the tourist that wants to go to, like, Times Square. I'm, you know, looking for hole in the walls and stuff like that. But, like, you never find yourself in a position where you're actually looking at the terrain at all. You just see city block and another city block, and that's it. So you crest this hill for basically the next 2 miles or so until you get up to about like 85th Street or so. And you recognize once you're starting to go downhill a little bit, like, oh, that might have been the hardest hill of the entire race. That feels weird. And I think it was mile 18 and a half or so, or around the same distance as the long run was beforehand, that things were really starting to come together. You know,
yeah.
I realized that, you know, I should have found some sort of pit stop with some extra sunscreen or something, because it was feeling hot and it's beating right down on you with the sort of, you know, the matriculating heat of being in a concrete jungle of sorts.
Right, right.
And you start getting worn out and, you know, you do a lot more walking and you play that game with yourself of, okay, instead of, you know, 0.4 of a mile and 1/10, let's go by blocks. So, you know, it's easy going all the way up through Harlem to the bridge. So you start doing, you know, 2 city blocks of running and 1 city block of walking. And, you know, then that gets to 1 and 1. And it just gets to a point where you're just walking a heck of a lot more than you anticipated. But at the end of the day, you know, especially when you get to the next bridge that takes you into the Bronx, where everybody hits their wall, Willis Avenue, it becomes a lot more of the Wild West, and all strategy goes out the window, and you just turn into a situation of, we're here to finish. And so that was the goal. Let's just finish this thing. Let's just take care of why you're here. The last thing you want to do is DNF. And if it takes a lot of walking, great. Let's do it. Let's have some fun. The Bronx is, like, that mile and a half stint in the Bronx is incredible. You have so many people rooting for you in such a great way. Gotta shout out the Boogie Down Bronx in their specific position underneath. It's like as you're about to enter the last bridge of the race back into Manhattan. I forget what kind of indicators of where exactly it is, but where they are is perfect because it just sets you for the next couple of miles and the next sort of portion of the race. And the vibes were just impeccable. So
that's great.
You know, that kept me going. And you just find those little landmarks and those little things that you can find any sort of inspiration in, and find, you know, a different song to listen to, or a different, you know, a different little stint from Coach Bennett talking about how badass you are. Like, you know,
anything.
You just find those little things and you just reach for it. And, you know, you could be surprised how much that is so important when you get to that point.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. So everything was, I mean, you kind of had shifted goals a little bit. The goal was still to finish, but you kind of took the pressure off yourself towards the end once you hit those bridges, which I think, like you said, a lot of people hit that wall for sure. What was the finish line feeling like? Did you get to feel that New York energy at the end of the race?
Definitely. So I won't repeat it too much, but I know this has been said by somebody else who had New York as their first on this show, but
yeah.
the worst hill is not the bridges. It is after the bridges when you're going back into Manhattan through Central Park.
Yeah.
Like, I've going alongside on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
Like, just because it never ends.
Yeah. There is, yeah.
Like, it's like that sort of optical illusion that you see with the steps going up every
which
direction.
Keeps going and going and going. Down. Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't stop. So,
yeah.
Thankfully, I had a bunch of friends that were set up shop like right in the middle of that. That kept me going. You know, chasing them and eventually seeing them and having that energy of like, one of my friends has this cute old dog that straight up just did a Simba from Lion King. And that was like,
oh, I love that.
Seeing that as a landmark was like the best thing. so it was, you know, it's still digging deep and finding those things to really find that energy and that motivation to keep going. So the sun had gone down by the time I hit the final 5K within Central Park itself. So I knew that it was almost finished. Like, everything was almost done. You've conquered all of New York City. You've taken care of everything that you needed to take care of. And once you get into Central Park, you just have to keep telling yourself, oh, it's just a 5K now. You're just doing a 5K race. You've done that before. You got it, you know? It was actually interesting because I, with about 800 meters to go, I remember, it was like right in front of that stage on the final turn before you go back into the park, into the finish again, where I felt like my first serious leg cramp. Like I felt the back of my right thigh just seize up all of a sudden to the point where I was starting to limp. And, you know, I sort of took a little bit of a walk just to kind of keep my body together.
Right.
Because I wanted to finish it in one piece. And thankfully, I think it was kind of a situation where I had done all of this running and walking. And I think I just saw the finish line too eagerly and started going at a pace that was a little fast in relation to everything else. And I think I just sort of jumped the gun a bit too early.
Yeah.
So took a break, I think 600 meter to go mark, just got back into just a nice sort of 12 and a half pace that was comfortable for me at that point, just to feel like I'd finished strong. And you see the sort of lights and everything that are in the distance for the finish line. And you start to feel that, you know, second wind that came out of nowhere. For me too, I had seen all the flags that they hang up like throughout either end of the course itself, which for me, being the Olympics guy that I am, that, you know, has loved it so much, I'm like, this is it. This is like the Parade of Nations. You know that Tiesto album that you've had in your head for like ages from Athens 2004? Like, you can feel like you're actually in there. Come on, you got it, you know?
Yeah.
So it ended up working out perfectly. There's some very unsettling photos of me just like, screaming bloody murder and victory like at the finish line because I had felt so accomplished in things. And I probably, oh my gosh, it's a feeling unlike any other. It really is.
Yeah. It's hard to describe it, I feel like, for most people.
That first finish line for a marathon, I mean, you feel like you are unstoppable, on cloud nine. I haven't got married or had kids yet, but until that happens, I think that's the greatest feeling I think I've ever experienced.
Absolutely. Really. Yeah. Well, cool. I mean, what an incredible first New York or first marathon and first New York experience. It sounds like for the most part, things went kind of to plan, right? I mean, no major injuries, maybe a little bit of cramping, but like in terms of a first marathon experience, it seems like you lucked out for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All in all, I think it was, things went as good as I think you do at that point, really.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you can't plan for everything, but at the end of the day, you can see what's going on, adjust accordingly, and try your best to keep it going, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, kind of like now that you're on the other side of it and you're reflecting on the whole thing, like what's some things that you might have done different, or also like what are some things that you would recommend as like advice to somebody who's thinking about running their first marathon?
So number one, do not underestimate the marathon when you've done a half. That top of the list. I think if I was to do things differently, I would have done more of a half and half thing where, so for me, starting in January and ending in November, I probably would have done my first half in like June, roughly. That way you have a bit more time, because that step from like 15 miles to the full 26 is so underestimated that, you know, runner's high is the runner's high, yes, but you still need to figure out your best way of fueling and pacing yourselves and taking care of that. Number two, I mean, enjoy the moment and enjoy the people that helped get you there. I think reflecting on the whole experience, there were so many people along the way that had provided so much encouragement, from friends and family that are a lot more direct and hearing you go all out about this type of fixation with running and being like, yeah, that's cool, Peter. That's great. You know, having that support as you dive into it there, the regulars you see at races all the time, the friends along the way that, the people that were in New York or traveled to New York to watch me run by a couple of times like that. My friend Joe would let me crash at his place so I didn't have to, you know, worry about the free for all of getting a hotel the night before and after.
Yeah.
There's so many people along the way that do just those little things that if one piece was different, you never know whether you would have been able to finish or you would have been able to train all the way or anything really. So enjoy the moment, enjoy the run, and don't take it too seriously, really. That, I think, especially with the type of environment that we are social media wise, where everybody's, you know, hopping on board with good reason, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the energy gets sucked into more toxic people within the space that, you know, the type of folks that will hop into the comments section from the peanut gallery and be like, oh, you're at a pace that I walk in, you know,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And the people that project their own insecurities of what their goals are that they feel like they need to accomplish in order to feel like a runner, and ultimately making things worse for other people because they've decided for themselves that that's the barrier that they need to crush. And that invalidates anybody else who hasn't done that yet, you know?
Right. Right.
So, you know, that's the biggest thing that you really have to do. And it's something that even through the stuff that I've done in the running space since then, I've really had to grapple with, is not take yourself too seriously and just, you know, enjoy the beauty of putting one foot in front of the other, you know?
For sure. Yeah. No, I think that's great. I think that's great advice. It's like, a lot of people will say it, but I every time that somebody brings it up, I just want to make sure to highlight it. It's just like, yeah, don't take it so serious. It doesn't have to be. These are your goals. So you can kind of take it as serious as you need to, but definitely, you know, you want to make it fun. So make sure it stays fun first and foremost, for sure. Well, cool. Well, I would definitely want to get into what you have coming up next, but a few questions that I kind of like to ask towards the end are more just survey questions. If you've listened before, you probably know where I'm going with this, but
sure.
The disclaimer with like fuel and shoes and everything, that is your own journey. So you should be doing your own thing with that. But for you personally, what have you liked for fuel? I know you said you were a Goo fan. So was there anything else that you tried and liked?
Yeah. So for the marathon itself, very much doing the caffeinated Goos. And that seemed to work out pretty decently. I found that stomach-wise and just how I felt doing runs and races since then, that particularly the energy ones, so they have like a strawberry watermelon like goo energy, mm-hmm. that is a bit less viscous, a bit less sort of stomach inhibiting, for lack of a better term,
yeah.
on the whole, that I've noticed for people. That's been my main source of fuel, and just, you know, making sure to stay hydrated, whether it's water, liquid IV, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So that's the big fuel.
Okay, sweet. No, I like all those. And then for shoes, what have you liked for shoes over time?
So I am very much a weird anomaly feet-wise. I have like a very high and collapsible arch.
Okay.
That just in natural walking pace, I guess, pronates a heck of a lot. So I'm very much on the stability side of things. I did all my training through Brooks Adrenaline 22s, not really having any sort of rotation, so to speak.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I've kind of found that balance. I still have the Adrenalines for the longer runs, the easy days, but I've been able to do like Saucony Guide 17s. I just recently got, that's been my recent buy, and it's been fantastic.
Cool.
And a lot of stuff within the Saucony line. So not this past rides that have come out with the beaded foam, but the stuff before it, the 15 and 16, are really good for like a race day shoe for me. There was one race I did that I was going for a PR that I just said, screw it, we're going to try the Endorphin Pro 3s, and whatever happens to my knees, c'est la vie.
Figure it out, yeah.
But yeah, I'm very much the stability shoe guy that has to, you know, it's like that meme of Squidward watching from the top floor as, you know, Patrick and SpongeBob are, you know, running with the fancy stuff. So
sure. Yeah. Yeah, well, you like what you like. I think everybody's body's a little bit different. I just talked to somebody earlier today that he found a shoe that he likes, and he just has been buying it over and over and over again for like the last 20 years. So I think
if you're comfortable with it, then, you know,
exactly.
That's your buddy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Well, cool. And then from there, I know from your marathon, you kind of had you embarked on like a 5K challenge, and that's something that you just wrapped. So do you want to kind of talk about what that looked like a little bit? And then we can talk about what you have coming up next as well.
Yeah, for sure. So the thing that I did from April of 2023 to April of 2024 was a challenge where I did a different 5K race every week for an entire year.
Very cool.
So that was something that kind of started from me going to the Boston Marathon and experiencing the atmosphere there from the outsider's perspective. I, as a lot of people do after the first marathon, you kind of have this weird sort of depressive state, like, okay, this was an awesome accomplishment, but now what?
Yeah.
So had that kind of 6 month span where I didn't do a lot of running and kind of, stepped myself back a little bit, but went to Boston, got so inspired from all the people that I met there, all the shakeout runs and everybody that I talked to, and being able to see Eliud Kipchoge run by like it was nothing, you know, even for him, which was one of the one times that he didn't win a race, which, you know, I mean, just being around that is so, so surreal. So I decided, you know, I wanted to keep going with the marathon distance at some point, but we were going to be a bit more methodical and give it another go, but taking time. So I had done this challenge to try and keep things going, try and build up the speed a little bit, see what could come of it. And it ended up being this wacky experience where I think I had to travel to a big city, whether it be Boston, New York, or Baltimore at one point, like 9 times over 11 wow. weeks or something like that in the winter,
yeah.
because that's just what was available.
Sure.
But it was an incredible experience that I'll never forget. And that's all in short form content right now. So you can find me on Instagram and YouTube, and you can see all the different steps that took and all the different races. And, you know, hopefully you enjoy it. Hopefully it's an experience that can inspire some folks that, you know, even if it's that first step or that first, you know, 5K amongst 100 people, like, you can still accomplish some incredible things.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's a great idea. It's just like a matter of goals shifting, right? You went from the marathon and then you were looking for something else and found this other goal. So I think as long as you have something that you're working towards, you're doing everything right. So that's awesome.
Absolutely.
And then what do you have coming up next? Have you thought about what you want to do from here?
Well, I think I'm feeling bold enough to go back to the half distance.
Okay.
So I have started that transition from a bit more of the speed work and kind of 12 miles a week side of things. And methodically making my way up to eventually do the Hartford Half Marathon, which was the third of the three that I did leading up to New York. So I figure build up to Hartford, kind of take time away from racing, just because that happened so many times that, you know, eventually you want to be with yourself a little bit running, and see where it goes from there. Really. I'm keeping my options open. We'll see what kind of opportunities present themselves and,
go from there.
Give it a go. You know, yeah. I think if there's one thing I've learned from this whole running experience is confidence is not always confidence by the textbook definition. It's just entering into things by recognizing you have nothing to lose. So that kind of open-endedness, I think we're bringing that back and seeing where it goes.
Absolutely. No, I think that's great. And looking forward to hearing what you decide on what you have coming up next. Sounds like you're kind of coming off this challenge and everything. So keeping your options open, I think is a great idea. And if anybody wants to follow along with you and see all your 5K videos and everything like that, where can they find you?
Yep. So I am on YouTube at The Man Who Runs. Also on Instagram at the same handle. I am not on TikTok. My mental health could never. Instagram and YouTube. Those are the places you can find me.
Perfect. Well, I'll link it in the show notes as well, but I appreciate you walking through your experience there. That was awesome to walk through the whole thing.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the opportunity to, Taylor. This is an incredible thing that you've been putting together here. This is a great way of introducing people to the marathon distance and everything. So it's been exciting to kind of watch some of these episodes and enjoying the experience.
Cool. I really appreciate that. Yeah, that's awesome. All right, cool. Well, we'll stay in touch. Thanks so much.
You got it. Take care.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. If you're enjoying My First Marathon, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review the show. And if you or someone you know has ran a marathon and would like to share your story, I have a guest form to fill out in my bio on Instagram. That username is @myfirstmarathonpod. See you on the next one.